think our guests were, that was a bit of a confusion, so we'd like to apologize for that. And it's not announced when I join the meeting. So you know, it's an expectation when you go to a meeting where you're invited by the government, or people expect that you're going to provide food. Now there's something called austerity measures introduced here. So Parliament ordinarily becomes the first to be affected by that, which is something that I don't understand. All the monies get appropriated by this body here called Parliament. Without parliamentary approval, there can't be any money for any of the activities of government. But Parliament is the one, is the first one that suffers all these measures that have been put in place to try and save money. It's something that maybe we must take it up with our colleagues. But we are not going to vote for this budget unless you allocate more for Parliament so that Parliament can do its work. That's just a point of interest for the members who have been sitting for how many months now without their research. We are told there is no budget to appoint their research to do the basic work of Parliament, of the committee. And yet we are appropriating a lot of money for this and that. But I must lobby the committee that I'm leading now to start a serious rebellion. We are not going to vote until we get what we are looking for. Honorable Wick. There is going to be a presentation of a medium-term expenditure framework, a medium-term adjustment appropriation. So we must start there. Okay, that was just on a serious but lighter note. Can we head over to Smagaliso 2?
Thank you, Honourable Chair.
We must start with the board first.
Okay, I'll say introduce the member, so it's fine.
Oh, you were going to introduce?
Yeah, just that.
Okay. No, it's fine. He was here before. You were not here.
Yeah. Okay.
So probably you are the one who needs to be introduced here. to the chairperson, because you are not here before, but try chair, you can tell us what you want.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. It's an honour for us to be able to present at this point our annual report. We have had the opportunity of sharing previously what had been going on in our enterprise. We were also delighted to have been able to host some of the members in here at our operations out in Smagaliso, and followed after that with the CITES. So it is with absolute pleasure that I'm able to pass on now to our business director to be able to present the detail on that, and we'll take your questions for you. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Who are you presenting to? Who are you?
Chair, the presentation will be delivered by our business director, Terry.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, Terry. Thank you. I think it has something to do with endangered species.
No, the main all is dangerous.
Okay, just to recap our vision and our mission. Our vision to create Africa's greatest conservation-based tourism destination driven by community empowerment. and our mission to protect, conserve and present the Wetland Park and its World Heritage Values for current and future generations in line with the standards laid down by UNESCO and the World Heritage Act, and to deliver benefits to communities living in and adjacent to the park by facilitating optimal tourism and related development. Moving on, our structure, we're accountable to the National Minister. We have a board, a CEO who reports into the board, and we have four units: park operations, business, research, policy and planning, and the finance area. Looking at our performance over the last financial year, we achieved all of our indicators except for one in park operations. And I just want to say, I know Sand Park said they apply the DPSA standard of 90%. We're a little more ruthless. If we did that, we would be in the green all the way. But we sort of took a much harsher view on the non-delivery of one of the indicators. Program one, conservation and park operations. The strategic objective there is to ensure that the World Heritage Values are conserved. Starting with the first indicator, detection of poaching incidents within 2 weeks, that was achieved, as was the detection of illegal developments within 48 hours. We were able to respond to all of the EIA applications that we received, and we concluded the 5 environmental audits as planned. Here is the indicator that we partly overachieved and partly underachieved. We were set to clear 15,000 hectares of follow-ups and 500 hectares of initials. And the way the funding worked, we had a windfall in funding and we were able to do some additional follow-up work, but we weren't able to conclude and secure the funding for new clearing. And in the absence of follow-up funding for those new areas, we didn't want to tackle and intervene, because you go in there with one intervention and then you can't come back in and keep clearing, and in fact it worsens the problem instead of improving it. Looking at our annual game management program, that was completed as planned. Of course, the challenge that we faced last year was the drought, and we did end up tracking water in certain sections of the park, which had moderate cost implications. We were well able to contain these. We also actioned all of the applications that we received in the buffer zone. The hydrological solution for the St. Lucia estuary was a big deliverable for us. We were able to conclude the tender and award it. The contract was for the removal of 100,000 cubic meters of dredge soil. And the challenge there was to source additional funding for more work, because there's about 2.9 million hectares or something ridiculous like that has to be removed. Cubic meters that has to be removed. We have, on the upside, been able to secure more funding through the department. They were able to assist us tweak some business plans, and we have another $30 million to spend on this project, together with some foreign exchange windfall. The annual infrastructure program was completed on time. Environmental compliance by one of the contractors has been a bit of an issue, and they've been charged fairly heavy penalties for that aspect. Moving on to transformation, the strategic objective there is to optimize the empowerment in all activities of the park in a way that will improve the livelihoods of previously disadvantaged individuals. We were supposed to create 1,530 temporary jobs. We just overachieved there. We achieved more than our target for permanent jobs in the park. We were supposed to train 400 people. We overachieved there. We trained 1,425. And that's a link that goes back to the alien clearing. So you'll see it throughout. It has an impact on jobs, and then it has an impact on procurement, because those are 100% black-owned enterprises who participate in that program. Looking at our BSMEs, we achieved 94. Again, the same kind of knock-on effect. And procurement, we were able to spend 93% of our budget on BE procurement, on qualifying expenditure. Yeah. Tourism and commercial, our objective there is to optimize the park's revenue generation in a commercially and environmentally sustainable manner that fosters job creation and empowerment of historically disadvantaged communities. We were over target, and this was really largely a function of restructuring of our fees. We introduced new types of permit fees for day commercial operators and so on. Our visitor entry, we just overachieved on that. The facilities management program, we outsource our facilities management. That was completed on spec, to budget and on time. Our environmental education program, we overachieved there by quite a big margin, and this really was a function of opportunity. Kingsley Holgate approached us with a huge chunk of money and said, we'd like to roll a rhino campaign, a rhino awareness campaign in the East Mangaliso area. And in fact, the annual report is really the subject of that rhino campaign, where children walked from school to school carrying banners and passing them on, and passing on the word of rhino conservation. In terms of our implementation of our PR program, we've broken it up into different target groups, because claimants and traditional communities are, and councils and communities are, a particularly important target group for us. And you'll see that in the last financial year, we increased our efforts in that particular area. I mean, it was a particularly disruptive year, especially with all the service delivery protests, so it really needed much more attention and focus. In terms of our implementation program for other stakeholders, we produced 25 news flashes as opposed to 24. Moving on to Program 4, which is a corporate governance program, and that's to ensure that East Mangaliso's operations are properly funded and cost-effectively managed while maintaining an appropriate system of internal control and reporting of accounting management and statutory information. We completed our 4 reports in terms of the research. We achieved an unqualified audit, and we tabled our financials in Parliament on the due date. And we had an unusual year with staff, no attrition, and we achieved 100% there. Just looking briefly at our financial performance, our accounting revenue increased by 47.3%. Our expenditure increased by 6.7%. We recorded a surplus of 62.4%, and I think, I don't know if the members remember the big conversation we had about GRAP at our last session and the challenges that poses in terms of reporting. And you'll see the bottom bullet points, if you just leap to it, that total net assets increased by that value. So you immediately see the relationship between GRAP and the income statement and the balance sheet and the distortion it causes. The two contingent liabilities we reflect in our financials are a Sanyasi contract. This was a contractor who didn't achieve his labour targets in his contract, and we levied a number of penalties on him, and he subsequently went into liquidation. The liquidators have then attempted to obtain or to get a refund on those labour penalties. The matter hasn't proceeded any further, and we expect actually that it will prescribe in a few months. And then we have SQF. SQF is Siya Kubeka Forestry. They're the partner agency to Mondi. There was a felt fire in 2012. That went into their forests and damaged some of their forests. In February, they launched a litigation against us to try to claim $35.1 million in damages. This matter is likely to take about 5 years, the way these kinds of claims progress through the court. And, you know, it's always difficult to take a view on it, but our preliminary view is that if they do have a claim, it's certainly not of the magnitude and order that they've presented. Also, what I've done in this presentation is, instead of including the income statement and the balance sheet, I took guidance from our chair from the last session, and we've put in the budget so that you can see how we've performed against the budget. I think the big ones to notice is the first item, which is grant funding. And there we did underperform. We didn't get as much of the grant funding as we wanted to, and this really had to do with Lotto and Jeff and delays in securing that funding and awarding tenders and so on. Admin fees, there was a small margin of difference. We, in fact, recovered much more from project expenditure than we expected. Similarly, with park revenue, we had a 2.4 million rand benefit for above budget performance. Moving on to our expenses, we procured more chemicals, and this again ties right back to the land and alien clearing and rehabilitation program. Our depreciation was 1.5 below budget, and this really is a timing issue, where we project that we will be able to capitalize X amount of infrastructure, and then something goes wrong with the infrastructure contract, and we don't accept sign-off from the contractor because there are snags, and it causes slight delays in that. And that tells in the depreciation figures. Personnel costs charged out. Our budget was 12.2. We came in at 9.6. And the figure that you see here is a net figure. So what we do is we recover costs from our projects for personnel that are specifically assigned to those budgets, and we were able to recover a larger amount than we anticipated. Maintenance repairs was slightly over budget this year. There was a big issue in the bargaining council around the facilities management contract. KZN has historically settled at a rate that was much lower than the national rate, and they thrashed us out to the bargaining council, so the rate came in at 15%, the salary increase at 15% instead of 8%. And so these are some of the costs that you're seeing there. And management and admin fees, marginally over budget. Moving, I don't know why, I went backwards, sorry, instead of forwards. Our professional fees came in at over budget, related particularly to the JEF program, which is very professional fee intensive. That's where we hire our estuarine ecologists. Global Environment Facility. So what they did is they gave us $9 million to invest in the rehabilitation of the St. Lucia estuary and also in enterprise development. So our entrepreneurship programs were funded through there. And then there was a component, and this is why I say it's professional fees intensive, that was around institutional development. So we rolled out a big program with magistrates and prosecutors and SAPs and all the law enforcement officials to look to impart sort of environmental law and to really raise its profile and have it taken more seriously in the area. And in training, this really relates to training on all of our EPWP infrastructure, land rehabilitation programs and so on. And then we have a number of other costs that are bundled together that are really around gate management costs, water, electricity and so on. Because of the extensive drought, our water bills were sort of 2 million rand less than they usually are because we were using boreholes. So that was quite sort of interesting and significant. And the variance that we have is 62 million, which is our manufactured and plate surplus, our grape surplus. I just want to talk briefly to the auditor's report and to the FSC report. The auditor's finding was a clean audit for performance and for finance, but they did raise IT governance again as an issue. And it's really the difficulty one has taking a small entity and fitting it into a DPSA framework, which is built for really big, big institutions. So we've had a recommendation from National Treasury, and we've appointed somebody who's going to assist us to improve it and flesh it out and strengthen it in areas where it needs that kind of attention. Then on the FFC report, I'm going to make a really bad joke, but we think they've made a grat mistake. What it seems they have done is taken the surplus and expressed it as a percentage of revenue and decided that that's our shortfall in expenditure. Because if you look at their last year's report, and I've managed to find it during the break, last year they said we spent 100% of our budget. This year they said we underspent last year. So we have exchanged contact details, and we will have a conversation with them to actually find out how they arrived. First of all, at two different numbers for last year and at the numbers for this year, because we don't agree.
Can you elaborate on that?
Last year, they said we spent 100% of our budget. This year, they said we were 8% underspent last year and 33% underspent this year. And the only thing we can find that makes sense is that they've taken our GRAP surplus, which is an artificial accounting surplus, and expressed it as a percentage of turnover. So they've taken the 62 million. If you look in the income statement, they've taken the 62.3 million surplus and divided it by 186.6 million revenue, and that comes to 33%. And then they've said that's the 33% under expenditure, when in fact that surplus is not a cash figure. It's on page 51 of the annual report. And then they've done the same thing in the prior year, where they've taken the 10 million rand surplus divided it by 126 million revenue and said you've underspent by 8%. Okay. And we're guessing this is how they've arrived at their numbers because we hadn't seen this report until the presentation. So we will have a conversation with them to verify their calculation. Okay, so in fact there is no under expenditure in our view.
In both years.
In both years, yeah.
Of the presentation from last year. From last year.
FSCs
yeah.
of this one. The slide that I've just dropped in was the same, the equivalent slide from last year's presentation. So they've got a difference in their basis of calculation between the 2 years, but it also seems to be an error in this current year.
But it adds out exactly the same for both years, the error.
So there was an error in the FSC.
In the FSC report.
It's not that we saw is we under spending over the past 2 years.
You just threw the Honourable Chair. The important thing is we hadn't seen the presentation until they made it now. So there does need to be a process system just to clarify their figures. During the meeting now when we caucused them, they couldn't explain their figures. They just had to go back to the office. But when we do the sums, looking at the difference in the 2 years between the graph surplus, it comes to exactly the percentages they've now come out with. So we suspect that's what they're referring to, in which case it's an error.
Yeah, I will come. I'm just abusing my role as the chair. To make sure that they clarify even the point that you may want to ask questions. But they are just referring, they are clarifying the FFC's earlier interest around what they were saying. But you can note it down, Honorable Khadeh.
No,
alright, yeah, you can help.
Thank you, Chair. Remember one of the presenters from the AG's office said that there are processes and avenues where if you have disputes with your report, where you can be able to change your own vision of how you see your finances. Then the entity uses such avenues or platforms which are available to resolve all the issues that are mentioned now. Because according to them, they deal with these issues during the committees and the other platforms they have before even taking the
decision. Let me clarify, Honorable Khadeh. What happened is that we invited the FSC to come and give us an analysis of the budget of the department and the entities. And they did not validate the information with the affected entities and the department. They came directly here and they gave us this presentation. So that's why they say they were seeing the presentation for the first time, so they were not able to deal with certain of the information beforehand. So that's why they say they will then follow it up. It is not an audit per se, it's just information that we thought it will help the committee in making its deliberation, to see where the department and the entities were coming from for the past 3 years, what is the likely growth of the expenditure of the department and the entities for the next 3 years. Just information for the committee to help, but it picked up the fact that there is an 8% under expenditure by Simangali, so which they say there is a problem in terms of how they calculated that. So I was just abusing my position. So Honorable Khadeh would like to be my deputy. We can discuss that.
Thank you for
Are you done?
Just one more.
Okay.
So, and then just the, maybe just to belabor the previous point, this under expenditure issue was never, was not produced in audit, because it's not correct.
I've clarified that one.
Sorry.
Yes,
I've duly slapped off. And then just moving on, our last slide is really our demographic profile, which hasn't shifted. 71% African, 57% female, 59% of management is female, 46% black, and 2%.
What's the female component?
59%.
Okay.
And that's us. Thank you, Chief.
So, thank you very much. It's difficult in this current period to become a male because you are really
Saki's one.
You are really in danger because you put on appendix one.
Appendix
one. Colleagues, that was a brief and concise report from Simangaliso. They have managed to sustain the clean audit. The issue that I asked at the end, they were able to pick it up and clarify the IT governance. But generally, that's a very good report. CEO, you want to say something?
Honourable Chair, I think the issues have been covered.
Okay.
We invite questions.
Yeah, protocol-wise, the Chair opens, he hands over to you, and you hand over to your team. Protocol issues are not something that is it's quite known in the entities giving some onshore. There's no hands to engage. All right, just start that side and then we'll conclude here. You are welcome, Honorable
people who disability
failing to meet your target of I don't see people who meet disabilities. And then how did you decided on the 5% increase in visitors number to the park in the previous financial year, 2014-2015. But 2% in the year under review, 2015-2016, why such a significant reduction? My other question, who were invited to those 12 workshops that you organized and what would be substantive park-related issues that would be discussed in those workshops?
So on that spot, or you, yeah, that's possible. Honorable Mabini.
No, thanks, Chair. My colleagues have already in the chair complimented some, I mean, it's not that he's on the team, or I think there are things that he's in chair and the team CEO. On the legalness, on the legal system, I know the business director tried to explain, but I will be interested in the quantify the fee so that we must see, I mean, how much you spend and so forth. That will lead to why do you outsource that when the department's second program is legal and authorization? Why are you not utilizing the existing resource within here, program two? That would be what I want. Now, quickly, I've always been concerned about this two-week period of detecting poaching. The important question arises to say, what is the importance or the essence of detecting poaching incident within 2 weeks? If such poaching incident actually results in material losses of price, why 2 weeks?
Why not a shorter turnaround? Now, in terms of the job, why would you consider the creation of 40 new jobs a significant achievement as opposed to the target of 10, when in the previous year you created more than 19 permanent jobs? Why you are not sustaining that? And you claim as that as a VP. Now, lastly, I think we come from the People's and Park, and it was my first attendance. Now, I learned that there were previous similar conferences where resolutions were taken. I'd be interested in terms of your entity, to what extent you addressed the resolutions or implemented the resolutions 2 years ago of the conference that took place on the 8th to the 11th September 2014 in the Eastern Cape. Did you implement those resolutions that are applicable to your entity? And in terms of governance, how many community representatives are on the board of this Mandalizo Government Park Authority? Okay, I'll take a second one. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you. The first would relate to you sustaining the thing on very interesting book. But just to understand, is it because of your expertise or is it because it's manually so small? Given that you'll have clean on this forever and ever, amen. Yeah, that's exactly what is it that you also got there. The second is you bothering as well, though very passion, more than that. Are you leveraging the relations of the department broadly, like when some has members who engage them on what is happening in Mozambique and so on. Are the same relations happening at this level, or you need to have your own? Because you and Santos are not in Kalu, the two institutions. But what is sort of the relationship? And perhaps just for us to be assisted, I know that you are the third largest part in South Africa. The first probably being Kruger, then yourself. Which one is the second largest? Just for us to know what. The one on the board that has been asked, the signage contract has been put on hold. May I confirm whether that is true?
The signage?
Yeah. It's on hold, isn't it?
No, you can ask that now if you. To the chair, if you'd like, specifically. It was on hold. We were reviewing it because the contract hadn't performed.
Yeah.
In terms of the contract, we've now renegotiated.
No. Let him ask the question.
Okay.
And you must not be tempted to respond to me. And he must also not be tempted to want you to respond.
Yeah,
ask the questions and then give them a chance to respond.
Yeah, I'm just saying the information I've got is that that was put on hold on the basis of the quality issue. Now, couldn't that have been avoided right from the tender stage and not run with it and later have to begin cancelling it? And I know the very last that there are communities who are not necessarily waiting, despite the fact that it's a manganese or large plane. And I thought at some point I was sort of convinced that it is the case, that we have got the best model in terms of managing the park and the relations with the adjacent communities. Why is this persisting? Is it that the model is changing, in some instances, and which could be both? So that perhaps if there's an issue, the model may be very well. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Page 35 of the report. The approval of the financial statement is signed by the CEO. Supposed to be accounting official, not accounting authority. Am I right?
Accounting officers in a department, accounting authorities in an entity.
Okay. Let's clarify each other. The accounting authority is the minister. The minister is responsible to account to parliament on anything. He's the executive authority. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
No, but let me just leave that.
Okay.
The minister is the executive authority.
Yeah.
And they are accounting authority, accounting officer.
So the DG is the accounting officer.
We are accounting authority.
The minister is the
executive authority.
Executive, yeah. The minister is the executive. Okay. I don't know where I'm going to start. Maybe we must start this side. With the CEO, the chair will have the final bite.
Thanks, Chair. What I'd like...
Is she going to respond to some of the questions?
I'm going to explain it now. What I'd like to do is for our business director to respond to the questions, and then where there's a need for added information, I will do that. Or if there's a question she wants to refer to me. And I think that will then probably take the least time for the portfolio committee.
Yeah,
with your
permission. She responds to the... You must say to her, these are the questions you respond to. And then after that, you take whatever that you want to take. If you delegate everything, once you are done with them, we'll go to the chair. And then the chair will then close.
No problem. I can do it that way.
Yeah.
Thank you. I will touch on the question of the fire. She'll come in with more details because she's running the legal process. Then there were questions on disability, which she'd be able to answer. The 5% on tourism, the 12 workshops, she can come in, I can add in. The children question, I'm happy to deal with. Legal fees, she'll come in, I can add if necessary. The 2-week detection period, I can deal with that. The jobs, I think I can deal with that. She can come in if necessary to add in more. The people and parks resolutions, I will respond to that question. The clean audit, I'm happy to do the first response to that at a high level. for the CFO as well. Mozambique relationships, I can deal with. The significance and the size of the park, I can deal with. And the question specifically around community issues, I will do the first bite of that. And then the financial statements we dealt with. And the signage, I'll hand over to her. I can add if necessary.
Okay.
With your permission.
Do you have rivals in the park?
Yes,
you
do.
Maybe you must also tell us the conservation record of
the
park.
Going through the questions from the start.
You must allow it to start and then you can't leave.
Ah, I understand.
And then, Sean, is there something that you want to respond on?
Not actually.
Just to start with the felt fire, the way our law works is it doesn't matter where the point of origin is. If it crosses your land and goes into somebody else's land and causes damage, you're still held liable because you weren't able to stop it. So the one, they're claiming for two fires. The one fire started, we believe, in Kula Village and then jumped over onto our property and then went into forest. And that's a smaller amount of about 3 or 4 million, I think, that they're claiming. The big fire, which is in the north, there's a big dispute around the point of origin. Their suggestion is that it started on our property and went into their property. Our belief, with all the experts we've consulted, is that it started squarely in forest. And the indications are in plantation, sorry. And the indications, if we look at the statistics around those fires, is it most likely was arson. Because SQF have, I think, 60 or 70% of the fires are intentionally started, if you look at the history. Then moving on to the legal fees question. Our legal fees last year were 4.5 million, and they are shown in the detailed income statement, which is now part of the audited suite of papers. The way these cases work is we do work with DEA, but a lot of these fees actually get paid to advocates because they are the guys who have to sit in the front line in the High Court and defend the matter, and that's not a resource that DEA has. So we do work jointly with DEA and we do seek advice for them where we can to try to contain these costs. Last year was a very unusual year because we had the case against the sugar farmers. You'll recall they launched 3 or 4 urgent applications against us. We also had the secret development case, Secret Lake at least, which was this 512 house development on the banks of the Ngobo Seleni Lake. Then with all the service delivery protests. We had a number of civil cases that went to court on that in that regard. So we had an unusually bad litigation year. This is not the norm for us. Moving on to the signage contract, it was on hold for quality issues, and it wasn't a matter of tender. During the tender, we actually went and inspected the factory, and we looked at the methodology, and we were satisfied with what they were doing. Somewhere midstream, the signage manufacturer changed the compound that they were using to manufacture the signs. And that was only picked up after they installed it, and we saw that the signs were not fit for purpose. Having said all of that, we have come to an accommodation with them, and they will be paying to replace all of those signs and make good on the poor workmanship.
What's up to the litigation? How many cases are you currently engaged?
At the moment, we just have the fire claim.
Oh,
so that's the last one.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think she's covered those well, so I don't need to go back to her. Thank you, Honourable Chair. The question around the wetlands and the children, there are two parts that answer. You see, Mangalisa has an equitable access policy, yeah, which means we don't do free parks on a Friday for 1 month. On application, any disadvantaged school gets free access to the park on weekdays. And we also assist with putting on teachers onto the buses or guides. We also have a park bus. We also have a higher education program. So part of your indicator to success, like a Rhino Walk, you know, there's always re-looking at the long term, is how many of the learners coming to a higher education program are wanting to do more environmental courses. It also impacts on things like longer term Rhino poaching. So it's not that easy to measure like you would with, for example, public relations newspaper articles. It's a much longer term view that we take on it. But it is work for progress, because we have 22 schools that can touch the park if they're close, and in the district we have another 600 schools. We currently don't have access to the budget to actually make sure they all get to the school, to the park at least once in their school curriculum. We're also working on new ideas of working with teachers to get more inclusive approaches to providing material for their curriculum in the actual teaching. But youth is a big, big area for us. We also link it into wilderness trails. The two-week period was derived from the IUCN, International Union of Conservation, their best practice standards. And that's where the 48 hours for an unauthorized development comes from, and 2 weeks for a serious poaching issue. They say if it's outside of that, then management is a management issue. And that's where it was derived at. The jobs being significant, it's quite difficult in a park to maintain new jobs at the same level each year, because it depends on what you're doing in the year. So for example, the year before, we might have put out a number of new concessions and licenses for tourism activities like boats or game drive vehicles. And through that process, you have called it a very good year for job creation. And it also reflects on the economy. So each year we look at it, and this business direction has come in and add a few ones. We look very realistically at what the economy is doing, what projects we've got coming up that year. So for example, next year, a number of licenses will be coming up again. And in that process, we might even expand the number of licenses to get tendered. So the job numbers would increase. The people and parks resolution, to take one step back, because it partly deals with the question about community issues. People and parks in South Africa started in Isimangaliso. It started with the Cape Vital Accord. And Isimangaliso has always had a very inclusive process towards communities, because the park is, from a conservation point of view, very, very complex. You have 620,000 to 640,000 people live around the park. They can see the park. 80% of who live below the poverty line. Of the economically active population, 15.2% are formally employed. The rest aren't. So the stakes are very high. So yes, there are issues that are contested, and delivery is always too slow, because around the park, you've got approximately 13 Amakosi, you've got 6 municipalities. It's the second poorest area in South Africa, and you've had largely a significant poor delivery or lack of delivery from local government. So when the business director was talking about service delivery protests. Those are protests around the park, around water. We're in the lowest rainfall year in 65 years. So you've got a situation where not the people's pipes are empty. Yes, some people's pipes are empty. Many, many people have never had water. And so those are the conservation stakes being played out there. It's Imangaliso, and I'm quoting the board now, is often a little bit like a lightning stick because it delivers within its means. There's a lot of contestation around that delivery. Added to that is the fact that in the absence of other delivery around the park, it becomes even more poignant or more contrasted. Recently, and I think it came through in the Peakman Parks conference this year, I went to the whole conference this year, the last conference, I listened very carefully. I think in many ways, and this is not a view from on Dia's work, it's because of some of the provinces, many of the issues in the Peakman Parks conference have become lighter weight. And I don't mean that in terms of people wanting their land and wanting title. Sometimes title settlements of claims 10 years ago, people still don't have title. They still haven't been paid their per diem. But it's also the fact that that what people are looking at benefits is almost becoming smaller. In Isimangaliso, we've now got a very good, strong drive, which we are open to, which is really about stakes in tourism facilities. And those are tourism facilities either existing in the park or is tourism facilities that could be built in the park. So we're now, through board, with the board, going through a very aggressive process of actually packaging projects in the park to actually try and break what we consider the last frontier in conservation. And that's economic empowerment through fixed assets as opposed to just night drives. So Isimangaliso can say it was the first black charter-operated boat in South Africa. But it actually has to go beyond that. So yes, we do have some lodges which have significant black partners, which we call mandatory partners. But where people have settled claims, they weren't paid out the full value by Land Affairs or they haven't been paid at all. They're now saying, what's in this title? What does title actually mean? And that's the driving point that we're dealing with in Isimangaliso. And that's a reality, I think, to different extents in all parks in South Africa. But we embrace it openly and we deal with it. In regard to the board itself and the implementation of previous people in parks resolutions, yes, we do implement them. One of the resolutions in Mthatha was two board members per entity. Isimangaliso only has one board member who's there representing claimants as such or communities. There's another board member who's a member of the Amakosi, but many of those things stay in legislation. And it's not necessarily within entities jurisdiction to actually determine the number of board members. Currently, it's Imangaliso, and our chair will add in, you had two. The last board had three from those institutions.
How many board members?
It's Imangaliso, in terms of legislation, has 7 to 9 members. at the moment, I'm an ex officio member as a CFO, and there's a department member of the board. CEO. Yeah, always easy to be the CFO. Yeah. We also have.
So it's 7.
It's 7 to 9. But currently we have 12.
No.
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah. I'm saying how many members?
Yes.
What the legislation?
Yes.
You've got a.
Currently, if you include the, if you have a DIA board member and you include myself, you've got 12.
Yeah, but you don't understand my question. How many members of the board do you have?
12.
You've got 12.
Yes.
Non-executive members.
10. No, 11. Isimangaliso has an advisory board.
You've got 11 members.
Yeah, so it's 11 non-executive members and one executive member, and the minister's currently re-looking at the functions of the board.
Yeah, because you are introducing an issue to the community.
Mm.
Mm.
You are saying how the board is currently constituted is illegal. And I was trying to avoid that, but I see you want to raise it as an issue. you must raise it without really answering the question in a way that doesn't answer the question. You've got got 11 members of the board.
Correct.
And the legislation says you must have between 7 and 9.
Yeah, so correct.
So out of the 11 members of the board, two of them are from the communities.
Yes.
So, but why do you have 11 when legislation says supposed to have 9 maximum? I see something that you want us to entertain, because if you see legislation says 7 and 9 and we have got 11,
no,
so you are saying to us that
no, Chair, I don't ask the portfolio committee to entertain issues.
No, we
are. I answer questions. So if I did, there was an error. My protocol clearly needs a learning curve.
See, here you are dealing with the members who have got highest level of training in terms of oversight and picking up the nuances. You don't have to say something that can be picked up. You see? So when I ask the question, how many members of the board, you refer me to a legislation. I'm not asking about legislation. I'm saying legislation can say 10 and then you would have 7, but you are still 5. But if you say 11 and it's 7 and 9, how many? 7 and 9, but currently you have got 12. Is it something that the department wants to respond on,
no,
or something that you can comment?
Through the chair, my error, I'm looking at the annual report of my chair. We currently have 9 members of the board.
Yes, the maximum should be 9 in terms of the legislation, and then they comply.
The CEO says we have got 12 and then 11.
I think it's also counting the departmental rep that comes into the board. It's also counting the ex officio member.
Yeah.
But in terms of what is prescribed, without counting those that would come in as not what we call non-executive members. It should be 9.
Okay. But maybe something that you were just correct. Because when you talk about members of the board, people who have got the right to vote, if you were to put something to a vote, if the legislation says 7, then you need to know that you've got 7 members of the board. Others can come and speak, but generally they are not going to be able to vote, including the CEO, who doesn't vote because it's non-executive. He's ex officio. So the person from the department, is that person a board member, or is the person who goes and listens to discussions in the meeting? Shoni?
I think we would, it's something that we need to clarify. In terms of all the entities are established by an act of parliament, of course. So SANBI would have specifications around the same lines, but you would not find reference to ex officio per se in some areas. So the actual board members qualified as to where they're supposed to come. The board may not have less than 5, but not more than 9 members. I think the question that you're asking is to the departmental rep and the other ex officio, what are their roles and their voting powers? Then are they counted within the 9? I think that's where
the CEO
that's where
is not
going.
Counted in the 9. It's not them. He's an ex officio, he's not a member of the board.
Yes.
But he sits in board meetings. But board members are supposed to be, if it says maximum 7 and 9, and if the act says part of the 9 must then include somebody from the department, then you will have 8 and then you will have 1 from the department.
So look, I think it's a matter that you want to go and look at,
yes,
because it's something that has not been, look, for me it was not even an issue, but it does seem like the CEO was just flagging it as something that we must make sure that you comply with. But I think nevertheless we can proceed on the question, unless Okubela wants to.
No, I know that we still do some work on it, but I think the understanding should be that when board members are to be appointed, an advert ordinarily should go out from the minister calling for members, and it will specify how many members, and the minister will do that appointment. So no other person can then come later, either add numbers or whatever. It will be known. This is the actual number of board members. And if there are those who represent the department and some who are not elected or appointed from that process, will then, by virtue of them, designated by the ministry to represent the department, sit on the board, including the officer within the institution, which in this case would be the CEO, will then sit together. Now the issue is whether all of them constitute a board to the extent that now they must actually vote on the affairs and so on. Then we may want to go back to check the legislation, whether it gives them equal power, in which case it was not supposed necessarily to be. The others were supposed to be there providing information to the board for the board to exercise this power to take
the
decision.
The others ex officio,
yeah,
or coming to meetings to listen and just to contribute. There's a difference.
Mm-hmm.
If the issue has to go to the board for the board to decide, members of the board vote individually. And if the act says nine who are appointed, those are the people who must exercise the vote if matters are contentious.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, normally we don't vote. We spend 3 years or 5 years without voting. It's like in many organizations, you have 30 people elected, you never even vote. But those are the people who have got the right to take a decision. The others are there on an advisory capacity. Because you see, why I'm raising this thing, the board plays an important role. I know it's not a full-time board, but the board, in terms of ensuring that there's proper governance, the board does play a role, because the entity must report to the board. The board takes decisions, and then the board then accounts to the minister. That's how it's supposed to be. So the role of the board is an important role that the board plays, but of course the board must allow management then to exercise. So we it's something that we are just clarifying. It's not that we think that there's something wrong, but definitely you need to make sure that that is also clarified in the entity, so that there is no confusion. Our interest was to check whether there is community representation in the board.
Mm-hmm.
That has been our interest. We can proceed there, CFO.
Thank you, Honorable Chair.
CFO.
Well, he said it was
good. It's about being an endangered species on the
planet.
Yes, it's about three.
I also endangered a smuggling for
water with the rhinos. The question around Mozambique was, we have a working relationship with Mozambique around the Lubombo Spatial Development Initiative and the Lubombo TFCA. There's a commission that sits between the three countries for more than the Simangaliso. It looks at the five sub-TFCAs, Simangaliso, Ponta do Ouro, Ndume, Tembe, Futi, Jazini, and then Lubombo Conservancy between Swaziland and Mozambique, and then between Mpumalanga, Malanga, Swaziland is another TFCA, and then each TFCA has its own agreement. So we have a committee with Mozambique specifically dealing with Ponta do Orokozie Bay. In terms of Ponta do Orokozie Bay, what's noteworthy is Ponta do Ora is Mozambique's first marine park in the whole country, and it was through this process. Secondly, they have put it on their tentative list to become an extended World Heritage Site, but they're preparing the dossier at the moment. We also work very closely with Mozambique in a lot of their technical work because the turtles and the fish don't need a passport to cross border posts. So they come largely from Mozambique, so their resources aren't looked after. There can be a challenge. One of the challenges in Mozambique at the moment is Tekebenin Harbour, which is in their Ponta do Ora, possibly if it goes ahead, would be in their Ponta do Ora Special Marine Reserve, which is a deep water harbour. But clearly that's a Mozambique issue to deal with. We are working with Mozambique on studies that look at all big developments around Simangaliso and Ponta do Ora Special Reserve. And that's approved by the two governments. And that work will probably be completed in the next 3 to 4 months. The question that Chair's asked regarding rhinos is also a very interesting question. Isimangaliso has the fourth largest population of rhinos in South Africa. And we must remember all rhino populations in compared to Kruger are tiny. So it's the fourth. What's important about Isimangaliso's rhinos is two things. One is that since it's been listed as a World Heritage Site and Isimangaliso was established, the rhino population has expanded year on year, and we found new areas in the park that they've been able to be translocated to. And the second thing that's important from a diversity point of view is there are only two original black rhino populations, African rhinos in the world. One is in Shishuya Mfolosi Park, and the other one is in the Mkuzi section of the Simangaliso. The Mkuzi population is smaller than the other, and it's therefore considered the most valuable genetic population of rhino, black rhinos in the world, of African rhinos. There are more black rhinos there per hectare than anywhere else, so it's very good black rhino country. And that really links to the question about park size. Kruger's the biggest, Richtersveld is second, Isimangaliso is the third. With the proposed expansion of Isimangaliso with the marine PAGISA process, it would make Isimangaliso, if it went ahead, almost the same size as Kruger National Park, but it would be about 100 hectares difference. The importance, among other things, of that marine expansion is it puts 80% of leatherback and loggerhead turtle feeding ground in a protected area, and leatherback turtles are as rare, if not rarer, than black rhinos, and the last or the only major breeding site of leatherback turtles in Africa now is Isimangaliso. It's well worth seeing it. The other very valuable species is coelacanth. The coelacanth currently are just on the boundary of the Simangaliso, what they call the Silvana Bay canyons, which are very deep, and that expansion would then put those canyons into the Simangaliso. With the permission of the chair, I'll hand over to my board chair.
Are you done with all the questions?
Yeah. There are two other questions. One is the disability question. That's our business director, and then it was how do we set our tourism growth targets?
So on the people with disabilities target in our organisation, we've met that 2%. Outside of our organisation, we set the target in all of our contracts for our service providers and so on, and we monitor achievement. I don't have all the numbers with me off the top of my head, but we can pull something together and show you where we stack up. Then on the 5% increase, we really look at market conditions and we look at our pricing strategy and we sort of say, where do we think next year is going to be and how it's going to look? And we didn't, our numbers weren't what we had hoped for, but we have experienced a tightening fiscal climate and so on, and that has told.
Sorry, there's one other question, Chair, was the issue about the audit.
What?
The audit, the clean audit. Yeah, Isimangaliso has had a difficult task of having clean audits for every year of operation. And the reason it's difficult is because it leaves room for improvement makes it hard, so you can only fail, and that's always your fear. To answer the question, I think it's both. Yes, it is a smaller entity, and the financial controls and systems were very carefully set up when DA established the entity. I think the other area that makes it strong is we've had very good succession planning and staffing at Timangaliso, where staff members have worked their way through the organization, and there's been significant capacity building. But when it comes to audits, one can never be blasé. Every year is a challenge, and in some years we have had serious discussions with the Auditor General after their audits on certain issues they've raised. And next year, Isimangaliso, and I know some of the leading questions to the Chair, hopefully it's our target to get a clean audit, but very often the Auditor General throws curveballs at you. A small example would be accounting for your biological assets, you know, and that was a big, it nearly caught us for a qualification several years ago, and you know, our line was, you can't count the fish in the sea, it's very difficult to count the birds, and we don't trade in game, and the Auditor General then took an opinion, and at the moment, you don't account for biological assets, that's just an example, but the CFO might want to add on.
Okay, thank you.
Do
you all have a financial background? You are the CEO, CFO.
Our business director has a financial background and a business management director background. Our CFO has a financial background. And I have an party economics background, not a hard third year accountancy background.
Alright. Probably the reason why you guys your eyes are fixed on the financials, so that you make sure that you understand the importance of the clean audit. Probably.
Just something of interest, but not for discussion and finalization today. The letter
leatherback turtles occur in different places in the world. In Africa, leatherback turtles used to occur in several other places, and specifically in Mozambique. Now they only occur en masse. In other words, and en masse means 150 come on the beaches a year to lay eggs in Isimangaliso. Isimangaliso's population is considered the most southern turtleback population in the world, and research is beginning to show that it might be an isolated population. So there has been a long-term research and protection program for those turtles.
Okay.
Thank you very much, Chair. I'd like to be able to acknowledge right now that the reports that we've just presented has carried through work that was done by the previous board and the new board. And as indicated just now by the CFO, there's lots of work that has come through from the Audit and Finance Committee. That was chaired by the now outgoing Vice Chair, Mrs. Natebule. Exceptionally well done throughout for a very long period of time. And really made it a point that we were focusing on the things that we needed to be focusing on. The chairperson, who also retired last August, had been with the enterprise for a very long time, but with a full understanding of what it was that needed to be done in order to be not just be focusing on the numbers, but dealing with issues of the community. much of the engagement that we had with the people in parks was to a large extent led by Mr. Nzima. So there's a lot of tribute that goes back to the previous board. Mr. Lex, who also was instrumental in terms of the addressing of many of the legal cases that we were addressing, we needed to be taken care of in the previous term, did a lot of that, lot of his work, really, pretty much pro bono, and we are indebted to him in terms of the contribution that was made there. We are in a position right now where we've got diversified expertise in terms of the members of the board. It is gratifying to be able to find people who have been in the organization for a long period at a governance capacity, but also an extension in terms of we've got representation from tourism, which helps us to be able to address issues of responsible and sustainable tourism activities. And that has been exceptionally well handled with the addition of Mr. Langabalele to the team. We've got included in there persons who have extensive working relationships with the local community. Included in that is Professor Nzama, who is at Ogoye, and has worked together with Mrs. Nene at the same university, lots of work done in the community. So to a large extent, what we're finding is that if there are to be any issues that are flowing through, the competency within the board is strong enough to be able to help the executive to be able to do the work they're supposed to be doing in a more responsible and sustainable manner. Wanted to just highlight that. The DEA has been very, very supportive in terms of the work that we do. In the write-up on page 14 of our annual report, there's indication in terms of what our roles and functions are. The minister has gotten to a point of saying the need for us to be able to revisit the way we are constituted in terms of board, which we stand out, and therefore, together with the DG, working on the revision thereof. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chair. Parliament, do you want to say something?
Just one or two issues. On people and parks, on an annual basis, we provide a report on how entities and management authorities are doing the implementation of the resolution. I think there's a lot of work that Mogadishu is doing as well in that regard. We look at three main issues, but there are many, but the land claims conclusion, which is not their competence, but what's happening around them and how it affects them. Co-management agreements, that's what we expect them to be signing with the land claimants, and also the beneficiation model that comes in different ways depending on the area. Chair, Honorable Chair, I think we noted this area around the clarification on boards, how boards are constituted, their roles, their powers, the exercise of their independence and decision making, and then the composition itself in terms of the members. I think, Chair, with your indulgence, we have not responded that adequately. We want the department to talk to all of them for all our four entities. We'll come back to that.
Thank you very much. I think on the last point, I think it's important because when you look at page 14, the directors, which are the board members, there's about 10 when the last one is Mr. Esrupa. So these are 10 of the board members, and the act says there must be a maximum of 9. Probably the CFCO was right to say the act says 9, but we've got about 10 now. So I think you must just clarify that. If it's something that needs to be corrected, you must then fire one of the board members. Of course, I'm putting it crudely, fire, because you'll have to clarify if somebody has not been appointed. must just say, there's something that you want to add, Madam, because you must say, you see, if you want to speak, just raise your hand and say, Chair, can I just clarify something?
Sorry, Chair, no, I was advising DDG that Ms. Tinhloko is the departmental representative.
Yeah, but it's included here. Yeah. She's included as a member of the board, which is something that was just declared, but there's a point that I'm making that if you need to say to her that you are not a member of the board, but you are a representative in the meetings of the board, then you must say so, so that it doesn't become more than what the act requires. The point about communities, it's something that we really take very seriously. You remember that there was a request that St. Parks and Smangadi so much briefed us on what they are doing to empower those communities that are around. You came here to make a special presentation. So, as and when you come here, it's an issue that we'll continue to raise, because we really are interested in making sure that our government make sure that those who are living within the protected areas benefit from the, given the history where we come from and so forth. I'm sure some of the issues you understand them quite better than us. So we'll continue to raise these questions, which may be irritating but necessary to raise for the benefit of our communities. Of course, from your report, it does look like you are doing something right there, but just know that in addition to the audit opinion, we will continue to raise questions about the community. And the fact that it's Manganese or St. Parks and other protected areas must consciously come up with initiatives that seek to make sure that those communities benefit economically and otherwise. But I must say that we are very happy with the report. With a clean audit opinion, you must just we'll be very disappointed if you can regress from this thing, because we have set a very high standard. And you have now been joined by St. Parks. We also want them to remain in that high performing category, so that because when you interact with other people here in Parliament, they always say DI and its entities are doing very good, well managed and so forth, and we want to keep it that way. We will interact with the department when they come, and we will express our disappointment that we were not able to start with them before we go to the entities, that they've not been able to resolve the issues that are there. So that it's always ideal to start with the parent before you go to the before you go to the children. So you don't start with the, then you go to the parent. But of course there are issues that need to be resolved. Well, one would say that they should have been resolved before, but one doesn't understand what the nature of those issues are until we get presented with them. But we must thank you for coming. CEO, you mustn't demote yourself. Well, the male species is the endangered species. If you do devote yourself, you must know that the board in the next meeting will recommend to the minister that day. The CEO doesn't want to perform this role. maybe you must come in as an ordinary chief executive. but meant the advisor next time was sitting to me so that he doesn't disturb anything. If there's any advice to be given, then she can just whisper next to you. Now we are very far, and she's whispering, and we can hear that she wants to advise. So, thank you very much, honorable members. We are meeting again on Thursday. So, keep up the good work.
Thank you.
We will come probably, hopefully, end of this term. November to come and do the oversight visit that you wanted to do the last year. But we'll confirm that as soon as we have had engagement with the members. Thank you for coming, sir.
Thank you very much, Jim.
Next time we must also come here. Otherwise, if you are not here, you are not going to benefit from the discussions about the board composition. Now that you are here, you can raise the thing about me.
Will do. Thank you.
Okay. The meeting is adjourned. It's a request for ANC members to remain by the week to just clarify what is to do.
Did you get it from the...